This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a good afternoon again, everyone, on this Thursday. Are we into March 7th? Or is today the 8th? I lose track of dates this time of year. March 7th. Okay. Thursday, March 7th. Fred Heumann with you until 2 o'clock today here on Sports Talk 870. Been a blast filling in this week. I'll be here one more day again tomorrow. And I look forward to chatting with you and conversing with lots of people around town. We also have ticket giveaway today. We mentioned yesterday we're giving away two tickets to the Northwestern Michigan State game Sunday. That's a 6 o'clock start. We said we'd give them away Friday, but we're actually giving them away today. And we have a number of people that have registered. You still have a chance to do that during the next 45 minutes of this show. Dial 517-884-4783 for your chance to register for a couple of tickets to Michigan State and Northwestern on Sunday. That's 517-884-4783. We've already given away tickets to tonight's game at Breslin, 9 o'clock, Michigan State and Wisconsin. And that should be a humdinger of a game now with the events of last night. So it's the Spartans and Wisconsin. Tonight we'll talk with Mike Garland here momentarily, the Michigan State assistant coach, the former head coach at Cleveland State, who's been a friend of Tom Izzo for years. Jake Boss will talk some baseball in a moment. Later on, we'll do many other things. But last night, Michigan holding on to beat Purdue 80-75. Trey Burke with a big steal to seal it at the end of the game again for the Wolverines to keep them in the hunt. So they are now game back of Indiana. Michigan plays Indiana at the Chrysler Center Sunday with a chance to share the championship. Spartans need to win tonight and Sunday against Northwestern at home to jump into that share of the title. And of course, if Indiana beats Michigan, it's all over. Indiana wins it. And then we do it all over again next week for the Big Ten tournament. Not a big fan of conference tournaments. I've been on that rant for years for a number of reasons, as we'll get into maybe today or tomorrow as we talk about it. Speaking of tournaments, and more specifically Big Ten tournament, I just left Susie Merchant before I came in here. Her team was boarding the bus and off to Chicago for the Big Ten women's tournament, which starts today, actually. But for them, it starts tomorrow. Michigan will play Indiana today, and the winner of that game faces the Spartans as the number 4 seed tomorrow in Chicago. That tournament has been in Indianapolis a number of years after formerly being in Chicago, and now it's Chicago's turn. So we have the women on the way there. We have Michigan State, Wisconsin men tonight. I'm a little baffled. I am not a Tom Izzo, you know, rear-end kisser, you know, known him a long time. I understand that media can ask questions all they want. I get all that. But the criticism of Izzo over his timeout usage and non-usage Sunday against Michigan just blows me away. I mean, the guy's been to 6 Final Fours, okay? And people in the media nationally and locally are starting to, you know, question when he called. I think he knows when and when not to time out. He's developed a reputation as maybe one of the best in the business in the huddle and calling plays out of timeouts. And for people to criticize him for when he did and when he doesn't call a timeout, to me is preposterous. Really is. Buzzer beaters are the topic of the week in high school basketball. This is the state tournament. I can't remember 3 days like this to start off the tournament. Usually it's pretty ho-hum. Monday, if you saw us on the news at 11 o'clock on TV6, where I work full-time, we showed a 55-foot buzzer beater by Jimmy Codette of Williamston to send that game with Lansing Catholic into double overtime. Incredible shot. Catholic went on to win the game. So last night I go to the semifinal there at Williamston. Jimmy Codette, the poor guy, is watching the game from the top of the bleachers, the loneliest guy in the gym, and Lansing Catholic hits a 70 or 75-foot buzzer beater by Dylan Rush to end the first half. Now, the game wasn't close, so it wasn't nearly as dramatic as Jimmy Codette's on Monday. And I've never seen this. If you saw the highlights on the news, we'll show it again tonight at 6. It's an arcing shot at the end of the half that goes into the hoop and right back out, through the hoop and up and out, and then falls to the floor. But that's a bucket because it went through the first time. I don't know that I've ever seen that, and certainly not on a 70-foot buzzer beater. So if you're on the telly or you want to go online at WLNS.com, we'll show that again tonight on the 6 o'clock news. Incredible shot. Lansing Catholic did move on. They'll play Lansing Sexton in that district final. Waverly and East Lansing are set to square off in the Class A district at DeWitt. And, of course, there's a number of other teams locally that are still alive and are going in the boys' tournament, which continues Friday. The girls' tournament regionals go tonight. So we have lots going on. Let's talk some baseball off the top, because you know, if anyone who's followed me knows that my favorite sport is baseball. My second favorite sport is baseball. And baseball's my third favorite sport. And then there's all the others. But Jake Boss, Michigan State's baseball coach, has just come off a couple of brutal weekends. Not for the way his Spartans have played necessarily. They're 5-5 now after beating Tennessee Tech yesterday in Cookeville, Tennessee, but it's been brutal because of the weather. You're a northern team like Michigan State is. You can't ever get out. Even the games that you schedule here in the early days are mostly rained out, sleeted out, snowed out. And so you go south. You play games. They go to Greenville, South Carolina last week. They get snowed out. I think they got snowed out twice. They go to Cookeville, Tennessee this past weekend. It's supposed to be nice there. They get snowed out twice. So they've had four snowouts. They finally played a game. They finished the series yesterday or the weekend yesterday with a game played in like 45-degree weather, fighting the elements. They ended up beating Tennessee Tech 5-3. Everyone was freezing. And as much as I love baseball, it is not a cold weather sport. It's one of the things I have against the World Series being played so late. You get it in the wrong city at the wrong time. All those games are played in, you know, 35, 40-degree weather. Sometimes with the wind chill, it's under 35. Baseball is a warm weather sport, much as I love it. It is a warm weather sport to be played in warm weather, to be watched in warm weather, to be enjoyed by fans in warm weather. That's part of the appeal of the game. Is to go and, you know, take your coat off and get a little sun and watch the game. And cold weather baseball is, as much as I love it, not a lot of fun. So we're trying to connect with Jake Boss. Aaron, if that doesn't work, jump ahead to our next guest and we'll reconnect with him if for some reason you're not getting through to him. Aaron Young is our producer again today with so much to talk about and so little time to do it. Here on this Thursday, as March Madness has started, I mentioned the women left for Chicago already. Well, they'll play there tomorrow, the Michigan State women in the Big Ten tournament, which starts today. So March Madness is upon us. And of course, from the high schools, it's been going on for, you know, a couple of weeks, and the buzzer beaters we've had this week are just incredible. I'm not here just to pump what I do on television, but if you haven't seen him and have a chance to go online, WLNS.com, the 55-footer Monday night and the 75-footer last night are incredible in the same gymnasium. Enough basketball. Let's talk some baseball with Spartan baseball coach Jake Boss, who is still thawing out after that trip to Cookeville, Tennessee. You warm yet?
No, Fred, I'm not. It might take a couple weeks.
I just mentioned in setting you up, doggone it, you play in the north and you go away for your trips. You have several trips to the south. You go to Greenville, South Carolina last week. You got snowed out twice. You go to Cookeville, Tennessee. You've been snowed out four times, haven't you?
Well, we have. It's been a little frustrating. You know, we're only down two games, though, because we were able to make a few of them up. But, you know, yeah, it's been a crazy spring. I talked to a couple buddies of mine that were down in Myrtle Beach last week, and they were playing in the mid-30s degree temperatures at Myrtle Beach. And so it's everywhere this time of year. You try to be strategic when you schedule and think about location and games that are good for your RPI and budget, you know, constraints and things like that, and stuff puzzle to put together. And then when the weather plays havoc with us like it has, it makes it a little frustrating.
I was saying before you came on, Jake, as much as I love baseball, and you know how I love it, I don't love it in cold weather. It is not fun in cold weather, is it?
Well, it's tough. You know, it is. It's, you know, really the only guy that's that is probably warm out there is probably the guy that's on the mound. And he's the only one that's constantly moving. But, you know, it is what it is, especially in the north. And when we come home, you know, we're scheduled to open up on March 22nd at home. And so it's probably not going to be 70 degrees at that point either. And so our guys are used to it. It's one of those things where, you know, mentally it can be a challenge. But, you know, like I said, there's not a whole lot we can do about it. So it's a matter of going out and playing hard.
I've heard some criticisms over the years. Why do they play these games so early? Why play games this early? You really have no choice because the bulk of, in fact, the better baseball teams in the country and the bulk of the season by the teams in the South and the West and other parts of the country, they're playing games in January. You got to play, don't you?
Well, we do. You know, we finally have a common start date, which is the same now for every Division I school. But it used to be, you know, the schools in the warm weather states could start as early as they wanted to. And when you play 56 games in a short amount of time, you know, it really, if you could start earlier, it really saves on your pitching. Where, you know, for us, when we started, you know, our schedule, and when we get home now after spring break, we're jamming a bunch of games into a short amount of time, and we're typically playing, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, and Wednesday every week. And so that really is taxing on your pitching. You know, the Southern schools would play basically, you know, every weekend starting in the middle of January, and that's how they would get their 56 games. And so the common start date has really helped kind of try to level the playing field out. But, you know, at the same time, we can't play really any midweek games until the weather breaks up north. So we have to start early in order to get all 56 games in. There just aren't enough days to do it.
Jake Boss, Michigan State's baseball coach, joining us for a few minutes. Now you go, what, to Lexington? You have a three-game series at Kentucky. Well, how's the weather there, do you know?
Well, we've got a little snow on the ground right now, but Kentucky played yesterday against Xavier here, and we played at Tennessee Tech last night and then drove into Lexington. So,
oh, you're in Lexington now. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we're currently in Lexington, and we're going to practice this afternoon and then play the Wildcats tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday. And so there's snow on the ground, but apparently they've cleared their field because they played here yesterday. So
I've heard theories from coaches and scouts, Jake, that while Northern baseball players or Midwest baseball players, whatever you want to call them, may not be quite the caliber of some in the South and the West, that coaches and scouts like them even more because they always play in the elements and they are tougher. Do you buy that, or is that a bunch of bunk? A player is a player is a player is a player.
Well, it's probably a little bit to both, Fred. You know, I think there's a reason that some of these schools in the SEC don't come up to play at Michigan State in March.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't want really any part of it. And I can't say that I blame them, but at the same time, again, I think our kids are used to that. You know, really, I think the Northern baseball player, I think, is a kid that's probably playing more than one sport, at least hopefully in my opinion, is playing more than one sport. And, you know, that I think that to be honest, I think that saves their arm a little bit. I think when you're throwing all year long, there are only, you know, so many bullets in the chamber, I think. And you know, throwing a baseball is not a natural arm action or natural body movement. And so, you know, there's a lot of injuries that happen with guys that continue to throw and throw and throw. And I think guys in the North get a break from that by playing football, by playing basketball, by playing other sports. And it, you know, maybe it saves their arm and hopefully it can extend their career a little bit.
Jake Boss with us. You have a couple of freshmen I want to ask you about before we leave. Through 10 games, you're 5-5. One of them is Justin Allman, the boy wonder from Holt. He gave up in his first appearance a walk-off hit. I guess the other day he gave up a walk-off home run. Are you concerned, and where is his head right now, Jake?
Well, you know, Justin's a tough kid, and he wants the ball, and, you know, he's a very talented kid. And the first game of the year was probably more on me than anything else. I didn't really put him in a situation where, you know, that kind of lent itself to him being successful in his first college appearance. And, you know, so I'll take the blame on that one. You know, Justin's a kid that wants the ball, and he's a very talented young man, and he's learning, you know, as all our freshmen are, he's learning what it takes to be successful at the next level. And there's some details that need to be, you know, taken care of, some little things that, you know, maybe he could, you know, he and all the other guys could get away with at the high school level that you know, he can't, you know, at this level. And so Justin's going to be fine. He's, you know, we're going to run him back out there the first opportunity we get. He threw a lot of pitches on Monday, I believe it was, and so that may have played a little bit of a role in it as well. You know, you know, he made one bad pitch, and, you know, kid got the barrel on it and hit it out of the park, and it's, you know, that's the way the game goes. But he'll be just fine.
Good. Cam Gibson, Kirk Gibson's son. I don't know how much he's played yet. I haven't seen enough of the box scores. Has he played much? Your early impressions?
Well, yeah, Cam's got a lot of playing time, particularly in part because Tony Cechi, our regular center fielder, has got a foot injury. He fouled the ball off his foot.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He did. He fouled the ball off the top of his foot a couple weeks ago in Greenville, South Carolina. It's just one of those things that, you know, the cold weather certainly isn't helping, but it's kind of a nagging type of an injury. And we thought he was okay. We put him in. We started him against Austin Peay. He got three hits and then re-aggravated it again. And so, you know, he's been out for a little bit. I'm hoping to get him back in the game this weekend. But, you know, I'll tell you, Cam Gibson's done a terrific job for us. He's a kid that, you know, if you look at the numbers, you know, his batting average probably isn't what you would think would be very good. But at the same time, you know, his on-base percentage is over 400. When he gets on base, he scores, you know, and he's a guy that really brings a lot of different dimensions to our offense. He can steal bases. He can, you know, speed plays. And so, you know, he's a kid that really knows the strike zone and just, again, figures out a way to get on base. And so I've been very pleased with how he's played, and hopefully we can get Tony Cechi back and give us some more options. But, you know, Cam has done a terrific job for us.
Jake, I appreciate your time. Good luck tomorrow. Bring some sunshine home with you, and we'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Okay, Fred. Thank you very much.
Jake Boss, Michigan State's baseball coach. Let's make the transition from baseball to basketball. We have kind of a big basketball game here tonight. Michigan State and Wisconsin at 9 o'clock. Here in East Lansing, the Breslin Center, Mike Garland, longtime Michigan State assistant, good friend of Tom Izzo's, one of his Warriors on the bench, joins us. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well, Fred, and you?
I'm fine. I appreciate you joining us on game day. What are game days like, Mike? Is there any downtime, or I'm curious, for coaches on game day? You do a walkthrough, but are you watching film like right up until 7 o'clock?
Well, the majority of us are, and, you know, you got a thousand things going on, Fred. You know, you're rechecking to make sure that your matchups are going to be right. You're rechecking to make sure you're defending a particular action of theirs right. You're going through your mind and going through with the other staff members if this situation arrives and we're in foul trouble here, who we're going to play here, what we're going to do there, how we're going to counteract what they may do to us defensively and so that we can take advantage of them offensively. So there's a ton of things that still go on right up until game time.
Yeah, I had coffee with another coach this morning, mm-hmm. Mike, and I'm not a coach, so I don't know. But I know how you guys are film junkies, and I wondered to him, and I ask you, can you watch too much film? Can you overanalyze, or is there no such animal?
Well, I think in anything, you can overdo anything because you begin to second guess this and second guess that. But, you know, the majority, especially our staff who's been together for quite some time, been in all types of games and been in big games for, you know, with all the marbles online. You know, you learn that as a result of it, it all comes down to the players. And how they're going to come out ready to play, and what intensity level and passion that they come out with once the ball is thrown up.
What do you think the team's mindset is, Mike, having lost three in a row? Now, this is not your normal three in a row. In fact, as I mentioned to Tom Izzo Monday, I have never heard of a team losing three straight games and remaining in the top 10 in the country.
Well, I think our performance speaks volumes for that. I mean, every team we played against was a ranked team, and you know, we were right there. You know, two of them were 1-point games, and the other was on the road to a pretty good Ohio State team, as Eric Von Esteem beat Indiana a few days ago. So, you know, I think the people who are the powers to be in basketball looked at that and said, hey, you know what, this Michigan State team is a pretty good team. They can do that.
I know Tom Izzo has long said, you don't root for your arch rival. It's just against the law. So last night, with your only chance to share the title, is for Michigan to win, to stay alive and try to beat Indiana on Sunday so you can all share the title. Can you confess to rooting for Michigan?
Well, I'll just put it this way. I don't know how much I'll root, but I want them to win.
Okay, there's a difference between rooting and wanting the scenario to help yourself.
Right.
What do you know about Tom Izzo over the years? And you've known him how long? When did you know Tom Izzo first?
Well, we became friends at 18 years old when we were teammates at Northern Michigan. And I've known Tom ever since then, and we've worked together for seems like an eternity, and we were teammates and played together for quite some time throughout our college careers, and it's been a great relationship, and not only do we work together, but we're very good friends.
What kind of a player was Izzo?
Well, he's a good player. He was a point guard, and he was responsible for getting me the ball so I could score some points.
That's how you became friends.
No, he was pretty good. He was he's a Division II All-American at that position, and a very, very good player.
Did you see Mike Garland when you were a teammate and friend of Tom Izzo at a young age? Did you see a coach in him then?
Well, that's all he talked about. He talked about it constantly, about one day becoming a big-time college basketball coach. And, he's a guy that's doing what many of us wish we would do, and that's live your dream. And he never gave up on it until that was fulfilled, and that's what he's doing. He's living his dream.
It's funny how when you lose a couple of games, the whole world knows the game better than you, Mike. I've said this before you came on. I'm not here to kiss anyone's rear end, but I'm stunned at the criticism Izzo has received for timeout management against Michigan on Sunday. This man's been to 6 Final Fours, and we got us in the media trying to tell him when he should and shouldn't call a timeout. That stuns me.
Well, of course. You're sitting there in the comfort of your living room with no pressure on you at all, and you're saying what you would have done, and hindsight is always 20/20, Fred. It's very easy. So if we could have played that thing out in our heads and was able to see it before we made our decision, of course we would have changed our decision. So to those critics, I have to laugh. There's what, 20 or 30 Division I basketball coaches, head coaches, and the same in football. And if you look at it statistically, it's tougher to be a Division I head basketball coach or football coach than it is to be a brain surgeon. So, just because you can see what the surgeon is doing on television don't mean that you're qualified to do what he does.
That's a good way to put it. Mike Garland with this. Before we let you go, you told me way back when we were discussing it at practice, I said, kind of off the record, how do you like this team? And you pounded your chest and you said, Fred, they got heart. You feel you like the makeup of this team, don't you?
I really do. I really, really do, Fred. And, our kids compete night in and night out. When the chips look like they're down, every single time they've answered the bell this year and put us back into position to win, or at least put us in position where we had a chance to win. And when you're coaching kids, that's really all you can ask for.
I wish you well tonight. I appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you soon, Mike. I'll see you soon. I thank you for coming on game day.
All right, Fred. Thank you.
All right. Mike Garland, Michigan State's longtime assistant coach here on Sports Talk 870. We got a break. Before we do, let me tell you that we are still giving away a couple of tickets to the game, not tonight, but Sunday, 6 o'clock, Senior Day, against Northwestern. You can register by calling 517-884-4783. That's 517-884-4783. We'll still talk hoops. We'll change from college to high school on Sports Talk 870 right after this.
I'm Lynn Neary. Every day brings fresh news, developments, and interesting stories to tell. At Talk of the Nation, we look for the stories that matter to you. From international news to the latest campaign politics to the issues that touch your family. Tune in for the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Yeah, that was Talk of the Nation, coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. It'll be partly sunny with a high today of 36 degrees. Partly cloudy and a low of 22 tonight. On Friday, the high will be 40 and it'll be sunny. Saturday, partly sunny with a high of 45.
Back we are on Sports Talk 870 on this Thursday. The week just flies when you're doing this. And what I've been amazed by filling in this week, because I've done, you know, I've done radio for 30 years in Detroit and here in Lansing. But here in Lansing, since I haven't done my Human Touch show on FM, which was ended about 5 years ago when the station over there changed formats, I've been doing fill-in on radio on the AM venue. But usually it's, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours, and you kind of space out and you take phone calls and you have a million things to talk about and many topics. And in this hour, this week, it just flies. Now, Aaron is, I'm driving him crazy. It's probably going like months. He's timing these shows with his calendar. But for me sitting in this chair, time is flying. How are we doing with our next guest? Is he on the line yet or not? We're going to touch base with Rob Porritt, Hazlitt's longtime basketball coach. He's been at Hazlitt 24 years. The last 17 is the head coach. And he announced before the season, or at the very beginning of the season, that he was stepping down after this season for a variety of reasons. He just felt it was time. They need a new energy at Hazlitt. He's the football coach at Perry. He wants to dedicate more time to that. And he announced before the season to get it out of the way so his players and everyone knew that this was going to be his final season. So when you come to tournament time, as we are in now, and you know, you're one and done. You lose a game, you're done. So not only does your season end, but in this case, the career ends. So last night, his Hazlitt team faced Lansing Catholic in the semifinals of the Class B district at Williamston High School. Win, you move on. Lose, and not only do you pack up the whistle, you start filling memory boxes. Rob Porritt is on with us right now, and I appreciate his time because he's a teacher and he has class. How you doing, Rob?
I'm good. How are you, friend?
All right. You knew you were up against it last night against a talented team. You thought if the right things happened, you might be able to move on. Lansing Catholic is on a roll, aren't they?
Boy, they're playing well. I mean, we look back at their last couple of weeks. They had a game they probably should have beaten East Lansing, and they did beat Holt and won that dramatic game Monday night against Williamston. So, yeah, they're peaking at the right time, and I think Darren is a master of that. You look at his teams.
Talk about Darren Zwick, Lansing Catholic. I interrupted you, Rob. I was just filling people in that you're addressing Darren Zwick, Lansing Catholic's coach. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was just saying, he just has a knack for his kids playing well when March gets here. He just has a, you know, that's a lot more to that than people think there is. You know, you got to lay off people's legs and, you know, keep people during the dog days of February. And he has a way of having his kids playing well when the lights go on in March.
You were watching from the stands Monday night when Williamson played Catholic. We saw an incredible 55-foot off-balance buzzer beater by Jimmy Codette. Now, last night, you were victimized by a 70-footer. I've never seen this, Rob, and I know you don't want to see it again. Dylan Rush puts up a shot. I'm going to say it was 75 feet, and it went in through the hoop, back out, but it counts because it went through.
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't. I was already halfway to the locker room, just because I saw it go through the net. Someone told me it actually popped back out.
It did. Popped out.
Which, actually, by rule, if it didn't pass through the whole net, it shouldn't have counted if it came back out. But
well, wait a minute. Now, if it goes through the net and comes back out, it shouldn't count?
If it does not clear the net, and in any way, shape, or form, pops back out, then that basket should not be good. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not taking issue with it. The kid made an amazing shot, and everything. We weren't going to win that game anyway. But at that point, but someone told me that it popped back out. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
At the time, I just heard that this morning. And by rule, if it doesn't clear the whole net, and in any way, shape, or form pops back out, no matter how it happens, the basket doesn't count.
But so, if it I know you're not making an issue of this, but I am now, but if it clears through the net and all the way through and then pops back out because it has the proper spin, it counts, right? It has to go through.
I mean, if you think about it, if it pops back out, there's no way that it cleared all the way through the net because there would be nothing at that point to resist it and pop it back through.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I thought they were going to wave it off because I saw it.
Yeah. Certainly, I don't want to make an issue.
I know it.
Catholic played great.
Yeah, I know it.
And that was a non-factor. And like I said, I didn't even know it popped back out until someone told me this morning. So, you know, it's no big deal at all. It's just, it's funny because the person that told me that is an official and told me that that shot should have been waved off. That's
wow.
why they brought it up with me. And
yeah.
I said, well, you know, it is no big deal.
Yeah. Well, so, then don't watch the news tonight because I'm going to show it again and probably slow it down now.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I don't want to sound bitter at all. It's not at all my intent.
I get that. I brought it up. Rob Poritz with us. His career ended. It hasn't last night. We did a television interview with you, and you're very emotional, as I knew you would. And I'm never comfortable in that environment because I know when somebody's emotional and the camera's on them, they're going to break down. So I don't relish those moments, but everyone says they make great TV, and you were very emotional. When did it all hit you, other than right after the game when we spoke with you, that this is done, or has it hit you yet?
I sat down last night in my living room and probably got 100 different texts or Facebook posts from all kinds of different people, relatives, friends, former players, coaching fraternity people, and probably shouldn't admit this, but found myself sitting there sobbing in the chair a little bit. I don't know it's so much that I was sad for the end as I was just for the people that thought of going out of their way to call or text or post a Facebook thing, or you know, Coach Valentine just sent me something, and Coach Mitchell out at Langsburg, and you know, those are some awful good coaches to slow down their life. They're in the state tournament, you know, they just had huge wins, and to take a couple minutes and shoot something over to me to let me know that they appreciated the hard work and that our kids always played with class and you know all those things. I mean, that's just tremendous, you know. And my daughter made a really neat tribute to me, and it was emotional in that way, I guess.
And yet, I understand all that. And yet, you had made this decision before the season. You're content with your decision. You feel strongly that it's time to move on and do other things.
Yeah, I am. The minute though that first practice or that opening night Tuesday game in December comes up, I'll see. You know, the main thing for me is I'll see those kids that I just had in. 12 of them are back, and we took our lumps this year, and I think all of us knew that we want to believe that we took our lumps so that the future is better. And you know, part of me wanted to go into next year and say let's get back what we didn't have this year. But when they take that floor without me, it's probably going to be tough on me a little bit. But I think any year when you decide, you know, my wife and I were talking, any year when you decide to give it up, you're going to miss that next group, the one that you're going to have next, you know. And it doesn't matter. Well, you know, maybe I should coach this group. Well, you're going to say that for 50 years because you want to coach that next group and you're endeared to them for some reason. And so you just got to decide to just bite the bullet and call it good and move along. So,
17 years as head coach, but really 24 years at that school, administrator, teacher, and was football coach. You were Charlie Otluski's defensive coordinator. You leave a lot behind there. I mean, there's reason for that emotion, Rob.
Yeah, it's been a lot of hours. It's been in every, you know, just every kid that you come in contact with, you know, and end-of-the-bench kids that appreciate what you tried to do for them, and, you know, the different kids and the coaches and the some that come and go, and you know, we did a lot of winning around here in football and basketball, and that part's like a neat memory in itself. But to me, it's that kid that was on your championship team. He hardly ever got off the bench, and yet he sends you a 3-page text telling you about how, you know, how great it was, and those memories are for a lifetime. You know, those are the things that, to me, you feel like you did a pretty good job when all kids feel like you thought they were important and that they were a big part of what you were trying to accomplish and that you didn't just pay attention to the All-Stater or whatever. And that part's the part that makes me feel good, I guess, about myself.
Yeah, Rob Porritt is with us, Hazlitt's basketball coach, who's actually in class now and has to get back to class. Rob, there's a reason all those coaches texted you and called you and Facebooked you. It's because of the measure of respect you've gained. I salute you, and I thank you for your time today.
Fred, I appreciate you over the years for the coverage for the Mighty Vikings and the Perry Ramblers and just your friendship. You've just been a, you know, off the court and the field, you've been a good friend, and you're great for Lansing area sports, and you're just a great person, and I certainly appreciate you.
Oh, you're too kind. Now I'm going to get you off the air and rip you, Rob.
Have a good one.
I'll see you soon. Rob Porritt, Hazlitt's basketball coach, who announced his retirement and coached his final game last night. Let's say hello to a guy who has been there, done that, Ron Mason, the legendary former Michigan State hockey coach. Ron, I'm gonna transition into that. We just talked to a local basketball coach at Hazlitt who coached his final game last night. What do you remember about your final game coaching?
Oh, boy, I remember a lot. We were in the playoffs and had a heck of a team. We ended up losing. It was down at the U of M, and you know, it was really disappointing to lose the game because I thought we really had another shot at an NCAA championship. But, you know, the fans down there are so ugly and so miserable that, you know, all they did was they were happy that I lost, and pretty vulgar in terms of the way they told me that, which was something that I'll never forget.
Yeah, I'm not doing this just to get you to stir the pot with Michigan, but I've been in Yost once, and I've heard stories. There's a difference between rambunctious fans, and the vulgarity anywhere is over the top, isn't it, Ron?
Well, I think it's a little better now, Fred, than it was quite a few years ago. I think they've tried to clean it up some. Yeah, I would not allow vulgarity in our facility. I mean, I'd find out who they are and throw them out. I like the fun part of college sports where they can dress up and mimic people and have some great cheers. I mean, that's all part of college sports. But when you start to use the wrong words and start to pick on individuals using those words, it's really, really not very professional.
I've been told, Ron Mason, that for years after you coached, you refused to ever go to a game at Yost. Is that true? And now with your grandson playing, have you violated that pact?
No, I haven't. You know, and I'm going to stick with it. It's just one of those things that...
You have never seen a game at Yost since you quit coaching?
That's correct. I, you know, I shouldn't probably talk publicly about it, but I was so frustrated then. In the early years, that I just said, to heck with it, I'm not going to do it. Now, if he was in a championship game down there or something of that nature, certainly I would go, but I didn't go this year.
He would be Travis Walsh, the freshman defenseman at Michigan State, who is the son of Ron's close friend and former assistant, the late Sean Walsh. What kind of a kick has this been for you, Ron? You followed your grandson's career long before Michigan State, but now to see him playing at this level where you coach, what kind of a blast has that been for you in 1 year?
Well, it's hard to explain it all. I mean, this kid worked his tail off, Fred. He got there, honestly. He could have gone to almost any other school other than Michigan State, which tells you something. But to see him playing as well as he's playing right now as a freshman, on defense especially, where it's a very difficult place to step in and play, I'm really proud of him. He's a good addition to our program and the kind of player that every coach would love to coach.
How much do you advise him, or do you just kind of, other than talking to him, do you just kind of stay out of it in a hockey sense?
You know, we talk about it a little bit, but probably not as much as people think. This kid's got a lot of natural instincts that you can't teach, and as long as he plays to those instincts, then he's a good player. So every once in a while, you know, he wants to do more, and he thinks he can do this and that, and I tell him that, hey, the game will only give you certain things. You've got that innate talent that you can make the plays without thinking about them. Just keep doing that and you're a good player. So once he gets outside that spectrum, or any player does, I don't care who you are, you start being somebody other than you are, well, then you're not a very good player. So that's the only thing we talk about, is you can't beat the game. If you try, the big game will beat you.
Yeah, Ron Mason is with us. He was, until a couple of months ago, the winningest NCAA hockey coach in history, until Jerry York won his 925th game. Ron had 924 in December, late in December. Ron, he's a close friend of yours, and did you go to that game?
I did not go to the game. If I would have gone to the game to see if he was going to break it, I would have gone to five games, I think.
Yeah, that's right. He lost a few, didn't he?
Before he actually got it. But no, I texted him and wished him all the best. Told him, hey, stay in and win 1,000. That's what everybody wanted me to do. Whether he will or not, I don't know. Obviously, he's a good guy. He's a good representative of college hockey. And if anybody's going to break that record, I'm glad Jerry did. And I told him as well, I said, you know, if I would have stayed five more years, you had no chance at this. he said, hey, I appreciate leaving me a good team at Bowling Green, because he followed me there. And I did leave him a good team. They ended up winning a national title. So yeah. We've been close.
Ron Mason is with us. Ron, you didn't get out of coaching because you'd had enough. You got out of coaching to take on a new challenge as athletic director. And not necessarily wanting to go there right now, have you ever wished you'd just stuck with coaching? Not for the numbers, but just because you really weren't done coaching. And it was a little bit of a dilemma for you, wasn't it?
Well, it was a family decision, actually. You can't make those decisions on your own. And my daughter, Cindy and Tracy, and my wife, Marion, and, you know, we had to talk that thing over, because that had been our lives for so many years. And they felt that, hey, what I couldn't do a heck of a lot more in the coaching profession. I'd pretty much done it all, and it was hard each year on me. And when we lost and didn't get to the Final Four or something like that, or the Final Frozen Four, I should say. And, you know, it was worrying on them too. So I had this opportunity, and I had it before that to become the AD. This time I thought it was a good time. I thought that, you know, we needed to get some things done, and I was able to do some things that maybe another AD couldn't have done.
One of my least favorite things in life, Ron, I think you share this opinion, are meetings. That's the worst part of being an athletic director, isn't it? Meeting, 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 meeting.
Well, it depends on the meetings, Fred. I mean, some of the meetings are, you know, I really enjoyed every one of them because I was around really smart, good people, especially at the Big Ten level. I enjoyed those meetings around the Big Ten Network, putting that together. They were phenomenal meetings. On the other hand, when you're dealing with, you know, the press, sometimes those meetings aren't too much fun. And also some of the internal situations that are somewhat political and don't seem to have a solution to them, those were frustrating. But for the most part, I enjoyed every minute of it.
Ron Mason with us. Munn Arena was not exactly the house that Mason built, but it was the place you populated with sellout crowds and people in line. Now in the last year, they've been talking about either building a whole new arena or renovation. The decision based on budgetary situations is renovation. Were you disappointed by that? Were you hoping for a new arena? Or are you kind of glad they're keeping Munn alive, as it appears they're going to do?
Yeah, I think Munn's fine. We upgraded Munn when I was there, Fred. We got boxes and we got club seating in before anybody else had ever done that. We got video boards in there. We did some other things that brought it up to speed. The only thing we really need to do there is put chair seats in, I think. And that rink's good for another 25 years. They're doing some internal things, too, with the ice making equipment, which is only normal under if you have an ice rink, that stuff, it just doesn't hold up forever like a car. But, you know, I think we're okay with that. We do need to do something with our offices and locker rooms and that whole environment. It's all downstairs. We've done as much as we can. But these new facilities going up just put ours to shame. And there's other things you do nowadays that you didn't do before. Everybody has special shooting rooms, and they got special room, really unbelievable weight rooms in their own facility. The video piece is phenomenal nowadays, where you have to have a fairly large video room where the kids can all come in there and do some things. So I would like to see that happen. And I think they're obviously trying to see whether it'll work, and I think it will.
I'm amazed, Ron Mason. We talked about the attendance, and it's not to the point now where they're waiting in line, but Michigan State just finished in last place in the CCHA for the first time in history, but the people have come back. I'm not sure what that's about, but I've been amazed at the crowds this year.
Well, it's all about the coaching staff and the work they did away from the rink. Tom was there, of course, in the glory years, knew what it was like. And we had to go out and have an outreach to the people that were going in the first place. A lot of them have come back that had really dropped their season tickets. Plus the fact they've made some some good plans. Mark has done a good job, and Paul Shager, in terms of, you know, identifying areas that they can bring groups of people in there, and you don't have to pay $20, $22 a ticket. That's really helped a lot. And all we have to do now is show a little better improvement on the ice, and I think we'll get that crowd back, because now with the Big Ten league, you're going to see those schools in here on a regular basis.
Tom is the Tom Anastas that Ron refers to, who played for Ron Mason, was an outstanding player, heavily recruited by just about everybody. Has he been a better coach than you even thought he could be, Ron, or is the jury still out on Tom Anastas?
Well, he was my assistant a couple of years, Fred, and he also coached 3 years at University of Michigan Dearborn. He did a nice job at Dearborn to put that program together. Obviously, didn't stay together, but he did a good job there. And with what he's had to work with and the things he's done since he's been there, I think he's done an outstanding job. Obviously, we got to get back where, you know, we are one of the top teams in the country and consistently in that position, and I think we can. It's just, we just have to have patience. It's really a process in today's where you just can't go out and all of a sudden recruit 10 kids or come in and make you a winner. You got to get 3 kids 1 year, 4 kids the next year, 3 kids the next year, and that sort of thing. So he's doing the right things. We are good. We got some good players coming in next year. They're on some players that hopefully will be there the following year. By the time they get their program together, I think we'll be fine.
Do you have any mixed emotions about the CCHA closing down here in a couple of weeks and the Big Ten, or do you think it's high time?
Well, you know what? I think the whole thing's ridiculous. The reason I say that is the reason the CCHA was put together in many respects in the early stages was so that we could have a league where you could go and bus and go back and forth the same night or play home and home or wherever you wanted to do. And that worked out well. In fact, that's why Notre Dame, Michigan State, Michigan Tech, and Michigan went into the CCHA from the WCHA. Save cost, same school time, save everything that college sports are about. All of a sudden now there's a Big Ten league and people want to jump all over the place. And cases like Miami and Western Michigan, they're in an airplane almost every game when they're on the road. They're going to Denver, Colorado, North Dakota, Minnesota, Duluth, Nebraska. I mean, St. Cloud. I mean, they're on an airplane from Thursday to Sunday. Well, that increases your cost just unbelievably, whereas you could be playing on a regular basis the same schools that we wear and have a better chance, actually, of putting a couple teams in the NCAA tournament. So I think if we look at it down the road, I think 5 years from now, I think that league will be back together.
Do you really?
Just financially alone, yep.
Wait a minute, you think the Big Ten won't work and will break up?
No, not the Big Ten. I'm talking about the other league. The Big Ten will stay forever.
Okay.
I'm talking about the, I think it's the North American College Hockey League, wherever it is, with Denver, North Dakota, Minnesota, Duluth, that group, Miami, and Western Michigan. The old WCHA has stayed together, and that's where you see Lake Superior going. That's where you see Northern going. That's where you see Bowling Green going. So right now there's going to be 4 leagues out there, and I just think the CCHA was the right type of league where you had a chance to go to the tournament, you had a chance to put kids in the NHL, you also had a chance to play teams that were closer to you, and I think common sense will prevail, and you'll cut your budget by $500,000 pretty quick by going back to that league.
Okay, so I said that's your feeling on that CCHA, but how do you feel about Big Ten hockey? Do you like it?
I think it's phenomenal. I think it's nice to be in a league where everybody else has the same standards. You know, let's face it, the standards between schools when you're playing against a school of 1,500 or a school of 45,000 is different.
Yeah.
And the Big Ten and they all have their own little different types of rules. So it's nice to be in a league where everybody has the same rules to follow. And I think that we all have the same commitments. And I think you might see some other Big Ten schools start up hockey just because of it.
Right. Well, the other thing is, Ron, I don't know if you agree with this or not, my feeling is that even though the hockey nuts know that the programs like Lake Superior and Miami of Ohio and all these, you know, the schools that aren't big in other sports, I think Joe Fan, who really isn't a hockey nut, on this campus can identify and will want to go out and see Minnesota, Wisconsin, Penn State, the Big Ten teams, rather than Alaska, Northern Michigan, Lake Superior State. You catch my drift?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think they identify with the Big Ten. And I think that's one of the reasons that we put the league together. The other one, of course, is the Big Ten Network. It's going to probably do 35 games.
But, right.
Yeah, I think it's better, but we still are going to play those schools. Just, you know, to give you an idea, the one year we played North Dakota, who were the national champions, when I was first there, and we drew 2,500 people, we played Fair State and drew 5,000.
Hmm.
So, I mean, when you really look at it, the people around hockey, they know how good a Fair State is. They know how good a Lake Superior is with national championships and everything. So if you're a hockey fan, it doesn't matter. It's those other people that really haven't been hockey fans. I think they feel better about going and watch us play Minnesota or whoever, Wisconsin. Let's face it, we always sell it when we play Michigan, which is should be, but you're going to see all those schools in there.
I have a miserable question for you before we go, Ron. The list of players that you coached is phenomenal. Pick one. Who was the best?
You can't pick the best because in every era that you have players, there's players that people wouldn't even recognize their names that played for me at Lake Superior, for example. But they're putting together the top players in the CCHA over the years, and I was looking at a list there. And there's some of my guys that are on that list for sure. And probably
I see Ron Scott's going to be there, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I just think that you know, you look at players, how good were they in college? And then the ones who went on to the pros, of course, everybody like Orion Miller and all the Miller family. And Ronnie Brindamore played 1 year and stepped in the next year and scored 20-some goals. Mike York played for us, went in and scored 26 goals, the first-year player in the NHL. I mean, we've had so many good players, it's hard to pick one. Every one of them made the difference in our program, and every one of them still loves Michigan State. And I think that that's the most important thing is when they leave the school, where's their heart? Their heart is always back with the Spartans.
I just knew you weren't going to go there, Ron. I just knew that.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time, Ron. It's always great to catch up with you. Where are you? Are you in Florida or are you around town?
Fred, you would believe it or not, I'm out on my boat fishing.
Right now?
I was going to have to drop you real quick if I hit a nice sailfish or hit a nice mahi-mahi or whatever it might be. It's a beautiful day here today.
Wow.
And I thought, well, I'm going to run out and go fishing for a little while. And just I can start. I live right here pretty much on the ocean, so I can just jump in the boat and I'm out here in about 20 minutes and fishing. So it's great to be retired. Let's put it that way.
I'll tell you that. doesn't stink, does it? Well, happy fishing, okay. Ron. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. Take care.
I didn't know he was on the boat. Did you know that, Aaron? He's on his boat fishing. That would have been funny if he'd have caught a fish on the air. Big sailfish and reeled it in. That would have been radio like you've never heard it, except he would have dumped us so fast. All right, that's Ron Mason. Man, we've had a busy show. Ron Mason joined us, and Rob Port from Hazlitt, Mike Garland, Michigan State's assistant basketball coach with the big game tonight against Wisconsin, and Jake Boss, Spartan baseball coach. So we've kind of covered the gamut of sports here today and lots of things we didn't get to. I told you these hours, Aaron, go so fast. We have tickets to give away, and we have winners. How about that? Two winners tonight, we already gave away tonight's tickets. Two winners Sunday will attend Michigan State and Northwestern, courtesy WKAR Radio. John from Midland and Stan from Lansing were the winners, and they are going to the Spartan game Sunday night on senior night on us. So you guys enjoy that, and thanks for your support of this show and listening and registering to win the ticket. So you're only stuck with Uncle Fred for one more day. We'll be here tomorrow again from 1 and 2 until 2 o'clock. Aaron Young will be here. We're trying to catch up with Mickey Redmond, the Red Wing analyst. His wife has had some surgery, so we had to postpone him yesterday. And if things are well there, we'll have him on tomorrow, if not another time. Other things coming up tomorrow that we'll save for you. And I appreciate you listening to this show and hope you've enjoyed some of it this week and maybe you even learned a little something. We'll try it again tomorrow from 1 until 2 o'clock. We'll have a lot to talk about with tonight's game at Breslin, Michigan State and Wisconsin. If Michigan State loses, it's borderline catastrophic. No matter what they say about the quality of teams they played, 4 in a row just doesn't happen around here. If they win, they're alive in the hunt for the Big Ten title. So it'll be an interesting weekend, an interesting night. We hope an interesting show tomorrow from 1 until 2 o'clock. I hope you'll join us. Sports Talk 870. See you tonight on the television, Channel 6 at 6 and 11. Thank you so much, Aaron, and thanks for listening, folks. See you tomorrow.
From NPR News and...
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.